The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of the Gormley Group. He also serves as the chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. I'm looking forward to your always interesting questions on procurement.
Oh, well, yeah, we will get geeky here today. We'll do our best to become procurement geeks once again. And it's been a while. I think it's about 6 months since you've been on the show. So yeah. Lots gone on in that time. We had Section 846 implementation. Back in January, they had the public meeting, which we both attended, and then they issued their GSA issued the report in March, laying out sort of a blueprint moving forward. And now here we are in June, and next week, I think one of these, sometime soon, June 21st anyway, there's going to be another sort of public meeting with regard to sort of phase two and market research. So I just want to first start out by getting your thoughts on where we are in the implementation, some of the key takeaways, and then we can really get down into the geeky details.
Geeky beyond, yeah. So okay. Hopefully listeners will appreciate that aspect of it. Anyway, phase two, seems like it's the market research side, but it seems like a lot's already been said about the way the government wants to go, which normally would occur after market research. So I'm a little puzzled on that part of it, but
it's sort of ready, shoot, aim kind of thing, or
trying to get it back in the back before we shoot or have any shot. But I think part of the deal here, Roger, is there's no question that the government can expand its use of e-commerce. I mean, that's the marketplace out there, as most people know. I think a couple questions here is moving from a traditional base of full and open competition or open market procurements and other aspects of contract that's built into contracting to assure some attention's paid to the taxpayer dollar, one or two e-portals, which is fine to be a disruptor in a traditional marketplace. Having said that, what does all that mean? I mean, is it, when you go out for full and open competition, I've never been in academia, but I'm going to put academia hat on here.
You're going to get up in your ivory tower?
Yeah, I'm going to try this, yeah. Okay. So, you're going to get out there and, the competition is you go to the marketplace and then full and open, and the marketplace looks at your requirement and they decide whether they're going to respond or not. And, based on, sealed bidding days, once you got your low price, you make the award. And that's based on it. E-commerce is that you're pretty much dependent upon, when you click on the portal, only looking at the sources that have already been selected by the e-commerce holder or, owner of the e-commerce site. And so that sort of limits the opportunity to, one, negotiate, because I don't think there's any. Well, here's an opportunity for you to correct me on this, Roger. As far as you know.
Sure.
Is the government going to be able to negotiate with the e-commerce provider before they buy the item?
What, for a lower price or whatever?
Yeah.
I don't think, to the best of my knowledge, and we could be correct.
You are a lawyer, of my knowledge.
I don't think those sites work that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but that's part from a government standpoint, right? So if you're going to go a volume or something, you're going to buy a large volume, you want the opportunity to leverage the taxpayers' dollars. And so I think maybe this phase two market research will get into that aspect of it, because now we're into the buying mode, right, which is spending government money. So that's on the competition mode, fair and reasonable price mode. So,
To your point, to your point, it's interesting. That's at the industry. I don't know if you recall, but at the public meeting they had back in January, there was a good conversation around how large commercial institutions, organizations, buy, and they do get into, you know, basically negotiations with their suppliers to achieve, you know, savings. And then that through, you know, discipline of their buyers, they ensure that they utilize those contract vehicles, sort of like, in a certain sense, strategic sourcing, one could say. But the GSA report did not reflect any of that dialogue or even address it directly, which I found interesting. Perhaps they're saving it for this piece, but you know that would also beg why, to your point, some decisions have already been made about what they'd like to see in terms of statutory changes.
And also the thought process of the government in regards to having a reoccurring need for supplies.
Yes.
So how do you set that? You know, is that relationship going to be able to occur in an e-commerce portal? And how does that affect category management? You mentioned strategic sourcing. I mean, so there's those opportunities where the government, based on an estimated guaranteed minimum or some form of getting a lower price, which is utilized today, you know, how is that opportunity going to be reflected in an e-commerce portal?
And that's an interesting question, and hopefully it'll be one of the focuses of this next phase on how to address that, or, you know, what makes sense in the context of, you know, the federal buyer versus the e-commerce portals.
And so as far as e-commerce portals, I guess the question from, you know, folks in industry is that if you have, I would say the majority of companies are on the web.
Yes.
And you can buy products from them from their site on the web. So are they an e-commerce provider?
I think GSA's kind of answered that question. They identified three categories of e-commerce portals, right? One is the traditional marketplace people think about, where there's multiple different third-party suppliers posting their product. Another is the sort of e-commerce, I think they called it, which would be the idea of a company having its own site and you can buy from that company. And then the third one was the e-procurement, which I believe is the idea of like a Kayak or Ariba kind of product that sets business rules and goes out and searches for, you know, the best price or best product that you're asking for. So they did identify those three models, and I do think that they all felt they fell within the definition in the statute, because the definition on this of what a portal is extremely broad.
Yeah.
And it was changed to be broad to encompass all these different models. And I think GSA stated they would want to make sure they proceed, or their goal is to proceed with multiple different types of the models.
So GSA also has the e-commerce model and GSA Advantage, which
that's true.
Which a study was done last year, I think it was within DOD. That Advantage showed very favorable pricing on identical items. So I don't think that should be, hopefully in phase two, that doesn't get lost in the market research.
Well, that's a good point, Bill, because one of the things the statutes also required through this Congress, I think, was very thoughtful in this in terms of setting up the phases, but they also do have to look at what's the impact on pre-existing procurement programs. Now, you know, could GSA use some e-commerce commercial solutions to, you know, upgrade GSA Advantage or make it much more flexible and more customer friendly? I think even that study you mentioned, I think, indicated that, you know, although pricing was favorable on GSA Advantage, the customer experience on the, you know, private platforms was superior, which is an interesting thing. If you could put the two together, you'd have a really powerful solution.
So GSA has that opportunity here.
Yes, they do, except the statute prohibits a government-owned portal from being considered an e-commerce portal for purposes of, you know, the streamlining and whatnot. So, Bill, you know what? We're already up on the break.
Already?
Already, okay. For the first segment. So when we come back in the segment, I'm just going to real quickly go through some of the key statutory recommendations that GSA and OMB put forth in their implementation plan. Get your quick thoughts on that. And then we'll move on to some other issues like what's going on in the schedules program, ODCs or OLMs, one of your favorite order level materials or other direct costs now.
Another acronym.
Absolutely. Yeah. What's going on with that and how that's a game changer for the Schedules program. My guest today is Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of the Gormley Group, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Bill Gormley. He is the president of the Gormley Group, also chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Bill, so we're talking about 846, and when we took the break, I mentioned the statutory recommendations that changes in statute that GSA and OMB recommended to Congress in the implementation plan that came out in March. And let's just walk through a couple of them, at least a couple of them that are kind of interesting. One of them, first of all, and the one that everybody's focusing on, is the proposal to increase the micro-purchase threshold to $25,000 for transactions through e-commerce portals. The current micro-purchase threshold is $10,000 for civilian agencies and $5,000 for DOD. So just what's your thoughts on that initially?
Well, I think it seems like we're becoming more confusing within the government acquisition world, where I think the administration is tried to streamline or to have less duplication, less confusion. And I think this just starts to create confusion by having a different set of rules for e-commerce versus the majority of procurements that are out there. So I think that's something that should be considered and seriously considered. And how do you roll this out with everything else in place, so there's not two sets of standards on how to pursue? It's confusing to the buying community, the selling, and then to the selling community. Is the selling community is, hey, what do I do, or how do, what am
right,
I supposed
what rules
to do?
apply, yeah. or what?
Furthermore, that you'd indicated earlier in our first discussion, Roger, that GSA, I guess on its own, created three definitions of e-commerce.
Well, they identified three market segments that fit within the definition.
And there's clearly overlap within those, because there are folks who have e-portals that sell their brand as well as others. So, you know, it's not a pure.
No, I think it is. There's gray areas across the different, different models, different approaches. And I think the definition is broad enough so that it would accommodate any kind of future portal that evolves over time, whatever that may be. I definitely think it's broad enough for that. A GSA proposed, I guess, changing the definition a little bit to create the ability to have a portal of portals that GSA would manage and sort of, I guess, be government managed so that you would go, as I understand it, would go through that portal to get to the other e-commerce portals that have been blessed. That statutory provision was not included in the House NDAA. The $25,000 was included in the House NDAA. And I think one of the things that we're hearing is the question of, you mentioned it, the waiver of certain two sets of sort of ground rules for two different procurement models for the same product.
Right.
And does that make sense or not? Or how should that work, actually?
So when you mentioned GSA become the manager of portals, they're sort of doing that with GSA Advantage.
Yes.
These are already determined fair and reasonable prices being negotiated with the opportunity to get lower prices based on volume. And so they host that type of price movement. So hopefully they can blend all of the best of class and e-commerce portals together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And government could partake in that as well as the private sector.
Okay. So, and now the another one that's really interesting is GSA asked for essentially the authority to establish the competitive procedures when utilizing the e-commerce portals. It's somewhat akin to GSA's current statutory authority for the Schedules program to write the rules around that and orders and that sort of thing. And that recommendation, along with the $25,000 recommendation, are the two that made it into the House NDA. So do you have any thoughts on this GSA ability to being given the authority to write the rules for competition?
Well, I think the mean, GSA has a history here of having overall government-wide policy, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So it fits their mission. So I think, you know, e-commerce portals are here to stay. E-commerce buying and so forth.
Absolutely.
And yep. so they have background on this. I think it's just now a matter of how are you going to, you know, bring together. Obviously, there's different thoughts on this of how to utilize the e-commerce side. So, you know, GSA, through its interface with its customer base as well as industry, and then balance out the really there's the political side as well, Roger. You have the socioeconomic. We didn't even talk socioeconomic here.
Right.
You know, there's that industry base and a very committed government support for that, at least over up until now anyway. And I would say moving forward, there's going to be for the different categories of socioeconomic, you know, veteran-owned, disability, hub zone, small business, women-owned. I mean, there's I think there's 7 or 8 of those. So, you know, those seem to be that segment of government interest has been muted through this whole process. So I don't know if phase two is going to bring that out or not.
Well, I think that's one of the things that GSA will be looking at in phase two is that impact. Because it's interesting. It's the legislative proposals do kind of put the cart before the horse, because there are, you know, these ramifications and impacts that need further examination to see what, you know, how you craft them in a manner that gets to the streamlining we all like to see, but also, you know, balances those government unique requirements.
So part of this phase two, I think also is, you know, when you're talking about the thresholds being delivered, I mean, being elevated, excuse me, is, you know, Trade Agreements Act and how that impacts. And if you're DOD and, you know, the gray market area, as I understand.
Cyber.
Yeah. And as I understand it, the e-commerce provider is not assuring the buyer of no gray market. Or where the source is, and so that
for a marketplace,
yeah,
that, you know, and you know, that's I guess that's the current commercial model. But if you're an e-commerce provider who has their own website for your own products, I think you are standing behind those. I guess I don't know. So that could be a discriminator between the two. Actually, stop and think about it.
Yeah, I think that would have to come. I think there had to be more clarity on that.
Right.
You know.
Right. But to your point about trade agreements also brings the question, getting back to the rules of the road. So over here under pre-existing contracts, you have one rule where Trade Agreements Act applies. And in some, for some industries, companies spend a lot of money to make sure they comply with that. But you're creating a big channel, potentially huge channel, where that doesn't apply. And that raises questions too about, you know, because if you just, you know, let's say what's obvious, Trade Agreements Act, those are countries that have signed up to the WTO agreement on government procurement, and Chinese product and China did not sign up for that. So what does that mean with regard to what, you know, GSA's proposal, what are the ramifications implications of that?
So I think phase two is very, I'm glad to see GSA, first of all, congratulations to a meeting phase one.
Absolutely.
And so I think the phase two aspect gets much deeper now into understanding, you know, the rules of the road or potential rules of the road, or at least rules that they will have to address before any next. What's phase three here?
Phase three, I think, is that's when they come up, okay, based on all everything we've done, here's the rules of the road, so to speak.
Yeah.
So and here's what we think it ought to look like.
So
and it's the result. It's the, you know, the outcome of what the portals would look like and what rules are going to apply, as I understand it.
So phase two is GSA's GPS system recording everything, right? And then
yeah, I guess so.
Phase three is how do we get there?
Right. Okay. What are the directions?
What are the directions?
Right, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Well, Bill, you know what? On that note, you've left me kind of speechless, but we are at the end of the break, so it gives me a chance to collect my thoughts. My guest today is Bill Gormley. He's president of the Gormley Group, and we're talking government procurement. I think we've gotten a little geeky, but when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the schedules program, particularly Other direct costs, which are now called order level materials, and the implementation under the schedules program for that as a big potential game changer for the schedules program and delivering value for customer agencies. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Bill Gormley. He's president of the Gormley Group, chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And we spent two segments, Bill, talking about Section 846, an interesting statute, interesting implementation plan, lots of interesting questions yet to be resolved. So we'll be closely watching that. The Industry Day or the public meeting for GSA is holding is scheduled for June 21st. It should be a very interesting, I'm using that word a lot, but also enlightening conversation, hopefully.
You know, and through it all, Roger, I mean, at the end of the day, the government is at least headed in the right direction with e-commerce.
Absolutely.
I mean, so we have to kind of, you know, there's a lot of historical, and from, you know this better than I do, law and GAO decisions and everything else that people have built their businesses on and other aspects of doing business with the government. And so that's okay. That's understood. And then moving forward, you know, those folks, we all collectively have a right to understand it better on how the government's going to proceed. So we'll just leave kind of.
Right. Well, the potential there to open up the market, but also as well, the potential when people think about it, what, you know, identifying what are the fundamental government requirements that should apply. And then, you know, the commercial sectors, I'm more than confident they can figure out how to create a platform or portal that actually meets whatever those requirements turn out to be at the end of the day when we get all this done.
Having a little fun here.
Yes,
without,
sir.
Without getting too geeky, but I remember when I was a contracting officer back in the day.
Before the Civil War?
Beginning. Yeah. And I used to write my price on a 3x5 card and for a wrench and put it back in the file. Uh-huh. And that would be how we kept pricing information. So I love e-commerce.
Okay, absolutely. Okay. So let's now, we have, we're going to spend a little bit, the rest of this segment sort of talking about what's going on in the schedules program. And I think the thing that everybody's talking about is the implementation of the order level materials flexibility, which historically is called other direct costs, you know, the ability to include materials, services on an order at the task order level as part of the overall statement of work without having to have them specifically listed and priced on the contract, something that's more akin to the commercial marketplace, commercial practice, because not everything on a specific and a unique requirement is necessarily going to be known in advance. So it's a great additional flexibility, puts GSA schedules on par with commercial item contracts, particularly for services. And I just want to get your thoughts on it, Bill.
Well, a couple of things. One, if I don't want to go backwards here too far, but like Section 846, it looks like GSA is fast-tracking many decisions or looking to improve acquisition, and yet on the ODCs or the OLMs, I think you probably have your fingerprints on that somewhere when you were in government.
I don't know.
We tried to get ODCs when I was there. So that was many years ago. So this is taking a long, you know, I'm glad they've given birth now to OLMs. they name their child something else.
Right.
But the ODC, and I think it's for the schedules program, it's been a great opportunity to improve services to GSA's customer base by now allowing this, from a legal standpoint, people were probably doing it as open market, which is creating more work on the buyer standpoint as from a customer base. So I think the caution to the wind here from GSA is in selecting just seven schedules?
I think that's something like subset of the schedule.
Is that just creating, where they were taking, making, creating more convenience or creating more confusion on their customer base because they selected seven schedules out of 30-some, and GSA is also looking at merging schedules, and so they're doing all this at the same time. Just do it to the schedules program.
Right.
Is zero harm. And right. Why? I mean, that's kind of...
Well, yeah, and it just provides the flexibility cause for contractors to more effectively meet customer agency requirements. Yeah. It's consistent with the laws and consistent with the underlying statute. This goes back to the Services Acquisition Reform Act of like in the early 2000s, the origin of, you know, this capability on commercial item contracts. The FAR rules were issued back in the late 2000s, I want to say 2008, 2007, somewhere around there. And commercial item contracts everywhere, you know, started utilizing them. And we're in 2018.
GSA did this faster than the Caps won the Stanley Cup.
That's a very good point.
So, I mean, it's all relative.
It
right?
is all relative. Okay. That's right. Kind of right.
Couldn't
That's
help
true.
Myself.
That's okay.
Yes. Go Caps. Go GSA. Anyway. All right. So I think the big check here on this one accomplished.
Absolutely. Okay? Right. Absolutely. And I think the next key, just in thoughts, because I know you went through a lot of transformation of programs and the outreach and education to customers. When you were at GSA, now GSA is in that mode with OLMs. You know, they're incorporating into the schedule contracts. Hopefully, it will eventually be all schedules. But they're also rolling out training and outreach. And have any thoughts on what makes effective, you know, sort of customer outreach?
And yeah, I think a couple. Well, and that's a good point. You can say you're going to do something, and it just doesn't happen. So I think getting a good training program in place internally within GSA to understand this throughout GSA, and then have the GSA employees and programs carry that message forward with clear understanding to the customer base is in doing it, you know, day in, day out, month in, month out, year in, year out, and being consistent about it is really going to make it take off. And we always found out it took... And you know, I'm sure now with social media, it can happen a lot sooner now, because GSA, I think, is actually coming out with a schedules newsletter.
Yes, they are. They
and
have.
So,
yep.
And that was in there. So that need then that should just to me that should be like the daily weather report. It should be in there on every report, the OLMs, because it's going to take that kind of attention to really penetrate. And you know, this is a change agent of how people have done things in the past. And I think this will be an accelerator in many, many ways of allowing customers to get their full needs and services using the GSA schedule. So, being consistent, being educated, and I'll talk a little bit more about this maybe later on if we have time at the end, if you don't mind.
Oh, at the end? Okay. Well, you're saving something
that's
for
right.
the end. Okay.
That's right. So anybody that's almost home, you got to stay in your car now. Right?
All right. So we've spent a lot of time on OLMs. There's a host of other things going on. You know, we have the enhanced SINs on Schedule 75. We have continuing transactional data reporting.
Can we stop on 75? Can we just talk about 75?
Yeah, sure, real quick. Yeah.
So I think GSA, and we're talking about a lot of good changes they've done. I think this is one should put a bookmark or stop and just kind of rethink this, because GSA is actually, I think, you know, showing an increase of markup by using this, and it's really counter traditional commercial practices.
It's like the traditional or the current standard 0.75. Yep. Now it's 2% for the schedule if you use the enhanced line items.
And so I think it's great, and a lot of confusion. I don't think GSA is going to get out of it what it's thinking. And so I think it'd be nice if they
they over-engineered this.
Yeah, I think they're. It's like, why? I mean, if it works in industry, they're going to do it. If it doesn't work in industry, you know, the companies go out of business or they just get out of it. And this is not a commercial practice. And I think that's not the way the administration wants to go, nor I think the way that the GSA's customer base is going to go with it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. TDR, any thoughts on the continuing sort of evolution of transactional data reporting?
Yeah. From an industry standpoint, we're seeing acceptance in that.
Mm-hmm.
and the key, and then there was back and forth on the monthly reporting and the heavy burden of reporting. I think everybody's kind of gotten over that. I think industry's seeing, to be honest with you, industry's really seeing the relief of the CSP type, you know,
and price reduction clause. Yeah.
So that's a key. Government's getting great pricing. They're going to continue to get great pricing, and this just takes that financial unknown burden off of them. And so I think that's a move in the right direction. Yep.
Right. Isn't it interesting that, you know, that eliminating that potential unknown, do you say unknown liability risk of the PRC is so compelling that folks are willing to like upgrade their systems, do other things to, and in some cases maybe pay more,
incur financial costs, okay, expenses to reduce unknown financial risk.
Absolutely.
So again, government and industry, neither one are perfect. And that's okay.
Yeah.
So it's just here, it's the balance of it. And I think the interesting part here is TDR, from a government's perspective, is going to provide them data.
Yeah.
And so I guess the question is,
what are they doing?
What are they going to do with the data?
Right.
Okay. So this is something GSA, I'm sure.
Well, it's all interrelated. I know we have to take a break in a second, but it's all interrelated. One of the, one of the ideas behind the Section 846 is e-commerce. To get that data.
Exactly.
But again, the question is, what is the government using the data for? My guest today is Bill Gormley. He's president of the Gormley Group, and we're talking all kinds of different sort of GSA-related issues.
We talked Stanley Cup.
Oh, yes, you did mention Stanley Cup. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about category management, best in class, and a little bit about on the leadership at GSA, just a potpourri of items. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Bill Gormley, president of the Gormley Group, chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and Bill. I know we were talking, we're going to move on to some other potpourri of topics, but there's one last topic on the schedules that, there's recent RFIs with regard to the cyber sins on schedule, and, why people aren't using them or are using them, and why companies haven't offered under those sins. I mean, and to GSA's credit, they're trying to figure out, get some answers. But you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think GSA was sort of fast out of the chute to their credit initially on cyber. And I think from trying to address various customer interests on, where is cyber under the schedules program, GSA went ahead and created cyber sins. And I think that from a marketing segmentation, that was good. And I think they have enough experience now that they're asking the question, should we have them? Because what's happening is there's a spillover there's no clear definition on cyber. And so there's spillover into other sins under Schedule 70, 13251, I think it is a sin.
Yeah.
And so should it all go in there and let people, really get their solution to meet their cyber needs? And I think that's the fact GSA is asking the question, I think, is an indication that the sales under the traditional services sent under 70, continues to go up, but the cyber's not. So I think they're looking at,
perhaps people buy it as an integrated part of a solution as opposed to as looking at it as a separate line item.
Exactly. So I think I think the initial movement was for the right reasons, and I think the reconsideration movement is for the right reasons.
Right. Okay. So let's move on then. We got a few items to cover. So category management and best in class contracts. I think on June 19th, there's actually OMB is hosting an industry day, discussion about category management. And a big feature these days of category management is the idea of identifying best-in-class contracts and trying to get people to use those. And part of the approach is to try to reduce contract duplication.
Yeah, I think category management, I think we've talked about this in the past. There's been a lot of discussion out there on it. Is sort of a commercial approach to acquisition in government. Because it's so diversified, and really diversification, Roger, in government in this area comes from many different budgets. And so
and missions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so I think the interest is there. I think the focus needs to continue to stay on there. I think the best in class contracts you mentioned, I think it sounds good. I think when a customer makes a decision to decide on who they're going to award an RFQ to or an RFP, that in that customer's opinion is the best in class contract for their needs. And I think for the government to make an overall determination of identification of contracts, not being the customer, it becomes a little too broad, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And I think the customer base is more focused on their immediate mission and meeting their needs versus having a list that they have to go to and select from. I think that's that takes away the real value add of the contracting office.
Well, do you think, when you think about category management, you say it's pretty, I mean, as a more, there's all the diversification of missions and money, to the extent you're talking about an overarching approach, it's more local in terms of, you're going to do category management, maybe it's within GSA for its buys. Well, right? Does that make more sense?
Yeah, or? I mean, it's to your point, it would be more where you have, I hate to use the term control, but maybe it's not control, really interest, within your organization, within an organization of how do you want to acquire services or types of products, and then you make that decision based on your mission and can meet your needs. And that's, to your point, is more localized, or at least at an agency or department level, not at a government-wide level. I think it has proven over decades that strategic sourcing at a macro level does not produce the leverage that a lot of people thought it was going to produce. And I think this sort of spills over to the approach that category management's trying to use. I think it's too broad, but the idea is there. I mean, they should keep it in front of them. Okay.
Right. There's and the concepts there. Will apply, yes. But maybe they apply at a more local level. Shared services. That's a offbeat of category management in a certain sense. Any thoughts on that?
And I think shared services is, from a government's approach to shared services, is spot on. The reason I'm saying that is because that's really where your customer base within an element of an agency or a small agency, maybe they need personnel services, maybe they need a financial service. That could be a form of the shared services and category management. Getting back to our earlier point, when it's close to home, you're going to pay attention to it, or if you have a need.
Right.
And so I think shared services, definitely the government should be pursuing more and more of that. And I think we're seeing that. And GSA, I think it's right. GSA is really pursuing, from assisted acquisition services as well as the shared services.
Right. So speaking of GSA and shared services, the idea, or let's just talk a little about, there's a whole new leadership team at GSA. They've been in place for a while now. What's your impressions?
Two impressions. Can you have more than one impression?
You can have multiple. I said impressions, not impression.
It's good. Thank you. I think from an outside standpoint, I think we're seeing some of the things we've already talked about, some changes, some reconsiderations. I think that's very healthy. I think from talking to folks internally there, they feel that their opinions are
matter.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, absolutely.
They can have an open conversation. And Roger, you and I have known each other for a long time. I think the value of disagreement is being able to have a disagreement, and a lot of good comes out of it. You don't want people that always want to agree with you, because it just over time that doesn't benefit the organization. And I think here, the consensus from the folks that I've interacted with within GSA is very, very positive.
Right. I think the whole esprit de corps is very and moving in a positive direction. You got the big win on order level materials, and moving that forward. Sure, they can deliver. They're working through the implementation plan for 846, and to their credit, being very open with industry, which I think everybody appreciates. And you're not going to agree on everything, right? But that's
fine.
That you learn from that as well. Yeah. So any thoughts, so that's good news. There's no OFPP administrator. And so the question, does that matter?
Well, I think it matters as far as a void in, leadership. And that's not to offend anybody that's acting or anything like that. It's just that you need to have that, the administration's person that's always keeping a focus on it, and the ability to be able to go somewhere and have a discussion that is going to be a direct result to represent the administration. So I think it'd be nice to have an OFPB administrator. So I think that does add value and would, and hopefully maybe accelerate some of the things we talked about earlier, the government making, right, taking a position on.
Yeah. Bill, you know what? We're at the end. What, you have one more?
Well, I was wondering about the GSA training conference. You mentioned the administration, the new personnel administrator, GSA. So they are
going to her team, yes,
redo that. And they're going to make a decision, as I understand, to a location for the viewers in July, early July of this year, for the event to occur next year. So it will be a training conference.
Excellent.
We can't use
that's
the other
outstanding.
Term anymore,
and,
right?
Well, so no, it's a training conference, okay. And yeah. I think it's the value for money, and in this case, is it's going to be very good for, you know, supporting effective training on the acquisition process for contracting officers, acquisition professionals, both government and industry.
So industry should put in their budget for next year to go and be a participant in the training conference.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Yep. I want to thank my guest today, Bill Gormley, president of the Gormley Group, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.